RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Jingle Jangle Frank. Frank. I want to be very festive and happy this week. That's what we're doing.
Jingle Jangle Frank.
Jingle Jangle Frank and...
Beans.
See? Welcome. 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 One hell of a week.
That was a hell of a start, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, the last time I was on, Tracy, I missed you. It was just me and 40 minutes of talking. And then I went off and it took me 5 hours to get to Brooklyn. And then and that was my weekend was a blur last weekend.
You did great last week, by the way.
I'm happy you think so. I just try to make sure I don't embarrass you. That's my only objective.
Oh, God. Really?
Yeah.
You never embarrass me.
I'm speaking for both of us. I don't want to. This is why I'm very, very careful about affiliating with anyone or anything, because, you know, everybody's tied together.
Isn't it crazy how that happens? Like, you could talk to somebody once and all of a sudden you're like best friends, and like, it's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, interview someone on your show, Frank, and apparently that just like they leech onto you. Become a part of your soul.
It does. They know that they take a piece of your soul, and then all of a sudden you're friends. It just happens that way. So, I mean, and I guess there's positives and negatives to that in a public sense, because, you know, the positive is it's just human interaction. And if you're going to be a successful inhabitant of this planet, you're going to be interacting with all types of people. And sometimes, you know, it's just, you know, but on that public relations sense of it too, the downside is everyone on the outside of that interaction gets to interpret what's going on behind that interaction. And, you know,
it's hard, and they all have their own opinion about the person.
Yeah, and that's why, unless you're doing, like, you know, blogging about movie reviews or something innocent, it's really like I see everybody. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Trump should start a Trump news network, or this one should start a network here, or that and that. It's like I am so wary about joining networks and being parts of big groups of people. I just want to have friends and, you know.
I 100% agree with you. I used to think that it would be great if we could all team up and do something amazing together. But as I've gone along, I've understood that I'm just much better off on my own. Much better.
You have to.
I can't be responsible for every word that comes out of somebody else's mouth. And, you know, I interviewed Jerome Corsi like months and months and months ago about some stuff. And all of a sudden, I'm now connected to Jerome Corsi and working with him behind the scenes. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Really ridiculous.
And that's why I say whenever I go, I do this solo. If you're out or something's going on, I put my suit and tie on. I just get very spiffed up, but I don't want to make any mistakes. But either way, what's going on this week?
Oh, boy. So there's so much news to get into. I don't know. You know, I haven't gotten a chance to really talk about my week at the conference, which was just insane. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
If you want to, for sure. I, as a distant observer of what you were doing and the interviews you were conducting, the access you got, that was something else, especially because of how intimate of an event it ended up being. I mean, there wasn't very many people there from what I can see, but the people who were there are pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting. First of all, a big thank you to the people from the American Priority Conference for putting their inaugural event on, and there will be many more that will, you know, with any event, it kind of, there are things that weren't done correctly, whatever the case may be. The fact that I ended up down there and was invited to speak and was on a panel about independent journalism, it was really great. And they had a lot of really high profile people there. Like, I spoke with Anthony Scaramucci at length. I spoke with Corey Lewandowski and David Bossi. I spoke with Dr. Gina Loudon. I spoke with so many. Oh, George Papadopoulos and Simona Mangiante Papadopoulos. So that was something. And that whole night, that Saturday day and night was a blur. It's a blur, but it just shows the power of what we're doing and the way people take it. Now, they were out of prison. The entire media, or he was out of jail, I shouldn't say prison. And then the entire media was there. Everyone and their mother, every network, C-SPAN, CNN, ABC, NBC, all of them were in that room with Mike Cernovich, who gave the first interview to him. And of course, he stayed more like 30,000 feet about the story and stuff. And that's fine. And then, you know, obviously the press was like clawing to speak with them. But what did they do? They ignored them completely, came upstairs and gave me an hour-long interview sitting across from me in a living room.
Mm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was literally the most, like, one of the most in-demand figures on the face of the earth at that very moment, and he chose to speak to independent media.
That is just the greatest thing that could ever happen.
Really?
It just could ever happen, is that this... That kind of relationship with independent media, and I've said it before, the reason why it's so much more important than everybody forming new alliances, you know, new boss, same as the old boss type of crap with, you know, there's networks popping up all over the place. It's so much harder, to go to war with, you know, 10,000 individuals as it is to go to war with a monolithic group.
Yeah.
That just easily pigeonhole and paint with broad strokes. You can just take care of 10,000 people with one stroke because they're all Fox News affiliates, or they're all, you know, from this one or that one. To hell with that. You know, this is the age we're in. We're in the cryptocurrency age. Everybody is their own bank. You know, why the hell is anybody thinking about doing the old thing again?
Yeah, I mean, the only way, I'm not going to close the door on an opportunity like that if, like, somebody had, like, satellite access or something and wanted me to come on and do a week, you know, a show a week or something like that. I would never turn that down in a million years, but I would only do it if I could retain my independence. I would want to have all control. I wouldn't want to give up any. I would want to be able to do whatever I wanted on the outside of that. I wouldn't want to be beholden to anyone. It's just, you're right. You're absolutely right. We agree.
Yeah, no, I have a list of conditions too that I put down so I can really drill them in if I ever had some kind of an offer come my way. First, it basically has to come down to distribution. I want access to audiences, but independence. And my conditions are steep. Once I present them, they'll probably walk away from the table. But whatever. It's either you do things in a way that you can live with, or you don't do things, because then it loses everything.
Yeah, I keep on telling a certain someone, and actually a couple different people, stop giving a crap what the mainstream media says about anything. Stop wanting to appear on the mainstream media. Stop wanting to be a part of the mainstream media. Stop it. The regular people out there in this country do not give two hoots what those people say. They don't believe them. They don't trust them. You don't need them when you have direct access to an audience right in front of you who, you know, recognize the importance of what, you know, we're all doing here. So, with that being said, it was really a crazy weekend, for sure.
With that being said, yesterday, I know that every day we talk about the media being in full-blown meltdown. And it's not hyperbole, because what I'm realizing is that every week they are in full-blown meltdown. But when you think that it's full-blown, it's actually not, because they blow it even harder the week afterwards. And yesterday, just as I'm getting all my thoughts out about this Michael Cohen nonsense, and I'm so happy he's just going to be in a jail cell for at least a year, because you know he's not going to serve the full three. So I'm just happy that's just going away. But saying you're trying to sift through all the nonsense about it was very wrong, he knew it was wrong, as if Trump was Cohen's lawyer. You know, as if Trump was Cohen's lawyer or something like that, where, you know, there's a certain reason why you bring on legal counsel. And the campaign finance thing and Ted Lieu talking about campaign finance violations. And now that other phrase that I can't stand when people drop it. And not only can I not stand it, but it's pretty kind of scary. Unindicted co-conspirator. Tell me, Tracy, what is scarier than hearing government officials accusing other government officials or any American of being unindicted co-conspirators to a crime you cannot even articulate? That is so Stalin, I can't think about it. But then again, in the same breath that Ted Lieu made those statements about the president, he was also talking about Google and talking about how he would really love to be able to regulate speech, but the First Amendment gets in his way. So he's not a fan of the First Amendment. He's obviously not a fan of the Fifth Amendment if everybody around him who he doesn't like is an unindicted co-conspirator to a crime he can't even articulate. This is the shit that we have to deal with and try to decode on a daily basis. And then I go and just do one quick, you know, scan through all the headlines before I go live last night. And what do I see? There's a new something, a new little ditty we have to talk about now until they find something else to bring up. The president might have misspent inauguration funds.
Oh, gosh. I know that whole thing. It.
The inauguration now? We went from treason. We went from treason to how did the president spend funds for his inauguration? What the hell are we talking about?
It's never going to end.
It's never going to end.
I want to talk about this Cohen thing a little bit more, because he's, you know, he's such a slimy little, smarmy little Cohen. I've been saying this since April. God, I hate him. Anyway, yeah. This whole thing now, I talked about this today on Twitter. Basically, the language they're using is so interesting to me, because like in the interview, they're asking him, whoever he interviewed with last night, they're saying, did Trump instruct you to make these payments to influence the outcome of the election? And great. I'm like, where did we hear that phrase before? Influence the outcome of an election. Now, let's just forget about the fact that literally if a candidate gets their hair cut, it's done to influence the outcome of an election. You know, if they do anything, it's to influence the outcome of an election. Like someone posted on my Twitter, hello, I'm John Doe and I'm running for president. I would say more, but I can't influence your decision.
Well, here's the other thing, too. It always comes back to this ridiculous assertion that Stormy Daniels, a consensual affair with Stormy Daniels from 12 years ago, if that were to have gotten out,
it would make a difference.
That would have made a 74 electoral college vote difference.
Yeah, no, it's bull.
She is worth 74 electoral college votes. She can't even sell a damn book.
Well, you know, she did have to abandon her career producing porn, so there's that. But what I'm saying too, Frank, although I agree with everything you said, as always, almost, the influencing the outcome of the election is a recycled, reused trope from the Russia investigation that they're now putting on this to try to tie the two together subconsciously.
Yeah.
Did Russia influence the outcome of the election?
I don't know. Did Russia influence the outcome of the Uranium One deal?
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's what normal sane people say. But the people that are watching this, they're like subconsciously manipulating them to think that it's the same, you know, it equates to Russiagate somehow.
Right.
Sick people.
Did Russia influence the way that that the United States in the 1950s dealt with China? You know, it's like, yes, yes, we had Soviets in our government for decades. I mean, it's pretty much how the until 2016, talking about Russian influence on American politics and American governance, until 2016, you would have been a McCarthyite kook.
I know.
After 2016, you are an idiot if you deny it. And if you're an idiot if you deny it didn't start then with Trump.
What timeline are we on? I swear I keep saying that. I don't. It doesn't compute my brain.
I know.
It's bad. I know.
So now we got Cohen out of the way. We got we talked a little bit about the inauguration ploy now. What's next?
Let's keep moving. Let's talk about Flynn. Let's talk about General Flynn, Patriot General Flynn, and his, you know, his response to the sentencing guidelines put out by Mueller. We went over this the other day. Everybody is kind of up to speed, I'm sure, on what's going on there. He basically, in his memorandum, called out the government hard after they had already recommended no jail time. Brilliant, brilliant move by General Flynn. I got to be honest, because what are they going to do now? Say, we take it back. We think he should have 4 years in jail.
Yeah.
So it was like a brilliant thing for them to do. And they're basically saying, they basically entrapped me into thinking that this was some sort of a normal, everyday, friendly conversation. They basically manufactured some crime that really wasn't even a crime just to get General Flynn into the special counsel investigation. We know he's been testifying in other investigations outside of the special counsel, which is very interesting. Where did he spend all of his time? With what administration?
The Obama administration.
Oh.
I thought that was rhetorical. I didn't know if you actually wanted me to answer, so I was staying quiet.
No. I do. I want you to be a part of the conversation.
I just want to learn.
You know this already. Okay, anyway. So he other investigations, and that it comes out in his memo that he spent 60 something hours answering questions from other U.S. attorneys in the special counsel and providing documents. And then we learn all of the things about this memo or about these 302s. And Sullivan, the judge who has a history of going after dirty prosecutors, says, I want to see all these documents by today, Friday, December 14th at 3:00 p.m. Eastern time.
Yes.
And now I just read this amazing article, which is really, really, really interesting, from Jeff at The Markets Work. Good friend, Jeff. He's great. I wouldn't say it like we go out for coffee, but he's a good guy. New FBI 302 document appears to reveal interview with agents, not Flynn. So basically, what he's saying is that there's a footnote on page 9 of this document that Flynn's attorneys put in. It says 23 FD-302 dated August 22nd, 2017 at 3. FD-302 is the form that's a written summation of an interview. And the footnote in that portion relates to the sentence I'm about to read. Less than 2 hours later at 2:15 p.m., FBI Deputy Assistant Director Peter Strzok and a second FBI agent arrived at the White House to interview General Flynn. This sentence, combined with the footnote, have been construed to mean that an additional 302 was constructed for the FBI's meeting with Flynn 7 months after his January 24th, 2017 interview. So people are going with the assumption that those 302s that are referenced in that footnote are 302s from 7 months after the interview actually happened with Flynn, that the FBI waited those full 7 months and then made up the 302s then, or they edited the 302s then, or they got rid of the original ones and made new ones. Are you following me?
So far, yes.
Okay. What Jeff is saying here that is that doesn't appear to be correct. If you keep reading and that you note that every other footnote references those the same August 22nd form FD-302. So like every footnote in the memorandum references those August 302s. They read like this. By the agent's account, General Flynn was relaxed and jocular and offered to give the agents a little tour of the area around his West Wing office. This sentence provides the first big hint. By the agent's account. And it also says that they offered to give him a little he gave them a little tour, but it's written in a person that wouldn't be. Like, if the agents went into the building and interviewed General Flynn and then were writing up the 302s, they wouldn't have written it that way. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm making any sense. Anyway.
Yeah, well, no, I'm starting to get it. But then where's the originals?
So
like what came out of January 2017?
What Jeff is saying, I'll just finish this really quick, this point really quickly. What Jeff is saying is that the August 302s that are being referenced inside the sentencing memorandum that give Flynn's attorneys the ammo they need to be able to say, I was set up, appear to be 302s of an interview done of the interviewers and not Flynn. In other words, an FBI agent interviewed Strzok and the other agent that had originally interviewed Flynn, and those August 302s are a write-up and summary of that. And the January 302s remain.
Remain what?
Remain, like they were never changed. They were the same as they were when they first wrote them up.
So the original take that Flynn was not lying, that remains as the constant.
Yeah, that remains, and that's likely what was in the 302s from January when the interview was first done. But what Jeff is saying here, and what I'm tending to agree with here, is that there was an investigation into this investigation, and when it was ordered that that the government provide all of the exculpatory evidence to Flynn that was available, that those 302s of the agents that had originally interviewed him were included as well, which would lead to the logical conclusion that there is an FBI investigation into that. Because why else would FBI agents be interviewing Strzok and the other guy who interviewed Flynn?
Mm. Yeah, I guess I'm just a little bit I'm a little bit still confused as to where the hell the special counsel got the pretty much the green light to go. I mean, if all the special counsel, the only thing that had been in existence by summer after May of 2017, when the special counsel was put together, James Comey is fired, all that stuff. If the only thing that is still in existence at that point are the original 302s from January, where the agents said that Flynn was telling the truth or he was not lying, he wasn't deceiving anybody, then what the hell was Mueller working off of when he started making all this trouble for Flynn?
Well, a couple different things we could talk about there. I think that, remember, they took over the Crossfire Hurricane investigation from the FBI, and they were investigating Russian collusion. So they were probably going back to Flynn to find out why he was talking to Kislyak, even though he was allowed to talk to Kislyak. And they started uncovering possibly some of the garbage stuff in Turkey with the FARA violations and all that. And I don't know this to be true. And I know that I'm nearly certain Flynn didn't do anything wrong in terms of, you know, he filed retroactively a FARA authorization like everyone else did, because nobody ever went after FARA violations. Right. Mm. But I feel like in his plea deal, when it first came out, I recognize that they threw in there all of the charges about Turkey, all of the crimes, in quote, about Turkey, lobbying on behalf of the government of Turkey. That's in his plea deal. So if he pleads guilty to that, he basically can't be charged with that ever again. It's gone. It's gone. All the Turkey nonsense gone, right? So that kind of cleared him up and kind of let him take a breath, like, okay, this stuff is all gone now. I don't have to worry about that anymore, because, you know, they'll never stop coming after these people, ever. And it almost seemed to me, I said, when I first analyzed it, I said, General Flynn takes a plea for the country, because inside of his plea deal, it released him from his government NDA and allowed him to testify about everything he knew about any other crimes.
Right.
It's almost like this thing was a setup. It's weird. And I can't see how General Flynn would put himself through that. Unless he knew that when we got to this point, after suffering for 2 years or whatever it's been, that he would be vindicated in an outstanding fashion.
I can see that.
Just a theory.
It calls Mueller's character into question too. I don't trust him at all. I don't like him. I don't like his face.
I don't trust him either.
Yeah, but, you know, on the other hand, he is the person we've heard from the least.
I know. He hasn't said a word.
Robert Mueller, this entire time, has either spoken vaguely through intermediaries or whatever the hell it is. He has been out of the limelight. He has been out of every. I don't even know what the hell his voice. If you were to say, if you were to play sound bites for me, I wouldn't be able to pick his voice out.
No, I know. We haven't heard a thing from him. Like, seriously? Literally.
You'd have to go. You'd probably have to go on YouTube and find old clips of him as acting director, making public statements or addressing Congress or something like that, because. Out of all of this over the last 2 years, he is the one whose name we have said the most, but we have heard from the least. It's really weird.
And that's kind of how it's supposed to be, right? I mean,
oh, totally. It seems like it should be a normal thing with the kind of position that he's holding, but it's also made things very hard to gauge. You know, you can read when you read the body language of people like Adam Schiff, and you can watch their stupid demon baby faces, work and speak, and you can just watch their eyes shifting all over the place. And you know, there's a lot more there for us to gauge and to get a read on. This has been the exact opposite.
Agreed. And in an interesting other twist to this, which we don't know for sure is the special counsel or not. By the way, I will link that article from Jeff in the show notes for everyone. But Zoe Tillman, who is a BuzzFeed reporter, but she follows all of the D.C. court dockets. Like, she goes around and she follows all of the court cases in D.C. Mm-hmm. There's this case today, which is really strange. She says, hello from the federal courthouse, where the D.C. Circuit is set to hear arguments in a sealed grand jury matter. Politico previously reported observing someone refer to it as a special counsel matter. Arguments are sealed. We're waiting to see who goes in. And then they say that the grand jury matter was filed in August. There was a judgment in October, but everything else is sealed. Then it was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. And then they went back up the chain. And finally, now it's back on the calendar. Not only did they close the courtroom, but they closed the entire floor, so nobody knows who's going up there. So there's some sort of grand jury proceeding of a very serious and secret nature going on in DC Circuit right now today.
Yeah,
don't know who it is.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, just thought I'd share that before we go on though to this next thing, which we're going to talk about at length. Skillshare, Frank.
Oh, yes. Well, hey, it is Christmas, and give the gift of skills.
To share.
With everyone. Share with the world. Once you have a skill, you need to give it to everybody else.
No matter what it is.
No matter what. It doesn't matter at that point.
Dark to Light is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community with over 20,000 classes in business, design, and technology. You can take classes in social media marketing, data science, mobile photography, creative writing. You name it, they've got it. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, start a side hustle, or just explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to help keep you learning and thriving. I get so involved at reading through the course catalogs that I have yet to pull the trigger on a course. There's so many good stuff. Like, I'm serious. I'm like, wow.
It's like Netflix.
Yeah. You sit there for an hour and a half just looking through and trying to find what you're going to watch.
Yep. And then I just usually end up saying, to hell with it, I'll just keep watching The Office. That's it. I pay like $14 a month just to watch The Office on demand.
I'm going to talk to you about a show in a second before we get into the next topic. But okay. Before we go to that, though, make sure you guys join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer for just our listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's right. Skillshare is offering Dark to Light listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 20,000 classes for just 99 cents. To sign up, go to Skillshare.com/Dark to Light. Again, go to Skillshare.com/Dark to Light to start your 2 months now. That's Skillshare.com/Dark to Light with Lala,
Jingle Frank.
You say Frank like you're so disappointed in your knee.
I'm disappointed. It's just one syllable. There's nothing really going on there.
Frank is my dad's name, okay?
Frank's my grandfather's name as well.
Frank's my grandfather's name.
See?
Mm-hmm. It's about the Italian.
That's it.
It's a nice Italian name.
And my middle name is my mother's father.
What is it?
Nick.
Oh.
Frank Nicholas.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's also an Italian name.
Indeed.
Yep.
Indeed.
My mom and dad and their mom and dad didn't give us any middle names.
No?
Nope.
You know, St. Nicholas, I did a little bit of history on St. Nicholas last week. It was based on a thread that my buddy Brian had put together. So
Old St. Nicholas?
Jolly old St. Nick. And it's where many people, especially in the Western world, everybody's named after saints and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Especially them Italians and those Spaniards.
I like my Italian heritage.
So it could be a lot of fun. It could be a lot of fun. It could also be a lot of manic stuff.
Listen, my you know, obviously there's some Puerto Rican on my husband's side. A good portion of it, actually. Get them together. There's a 100% Italian side and 100% Puerto Rican side on them. Woo-wee. That's a mix.
Yeah. You need a timeout room for people to go and have just drink.
Gotta tell you, it's crazy. You got rice and beans and lasagna right next to each other on the table. It's pretty good.
I know.
So I was going to talk to you about Daredevil because I started watching it. I don't know if you've ever seen.
I have not. I heard that the first two seasons are awesome. And that the third season, a couple of my friends who are huge fans of it said it got a little SJW.
Oh, God.
But I have to see the first two. I watched Punisher.
Yes.
I saw that out of sequence because my buddies also told me that Punisher first makes an appearance. Frank Castle shows up in the Daredevil series, really? And then he got his own spinoff.
Oh.
But Punisher is awesome.
I know. I loved Punisher. Loved it. And this is it. It's over now after this season. There's only one more.
Daredevil?
Punisher and Daredevil, both.
Well, you know what? Good. Good. We need more seasons. We need more series that wrap up what they're trying to say in two, maybe three.
Maybe
three seasons.
You know, I don't know.
Situational comedy is something else. But when you're talking about, you know, the hero, the protagonist, he's a kind of superhero. There's only so many situations that they can barely get out by the skin of their teeth and win the day, you know?
Yeah, but what about Blacklist? Did you ever watch that?
Never watched it.
Oh, my gosh. You gotta watch Blacklist. I'm telling you.
I hear about Blacklist. I hear about Black Mirror.
I don't know about Black Mirror, but I'm telling you, Blacklist, like, I was inside of the head of Raymond Reddington every episode trying to, like, it's really good. Really good. Really, really good.
I'll check it out. You know, I'll check. What is it, like a detective type of thing?
Yes and no. Yes and no. It is very, very high level in terms of, it's great. It's just I'm telling you, if you had to watch three episodes of anything this weekend, I would tell you drop everything and watch three episodes of Blacklist.
All right. We'll see if I can convince Lauren to not watch Elf then.
You don't have to discard Elf.
We have very limited. I have a Christmas party we're throwing tomorrow here at the studio, and then my father's Christmas party on the 16th. From this week and next week are going to be nuts with Christmas parties. Everybody tries to bunch them up in the days leading up to Christmas. So finding 3 hours to watch anything is going to be at a premium there.
Listen.
Hey, What was I going to say? Also, have you ever seen True Detective?
Yes, I believe I have, but I don't know that I loved it.
Oh, no. If you saw it, then you would love it.
Okay, then no. Never saw it.
You have to go watch. It came out maybe 2014 or so, and it's really intriguing here. You got to go watch True Detective Season 1 with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. Tracy, I could have called you Stacy.
That's okay.
Tracy, this right here is something, I mean, you're going to just love it. But this comes maybe 2 years before anybody even started looking into rampant pedophilia, human trafficking, occultist, Luciferian, symbolism that has popped up. Everything that we are inundated with right now, this show started dribbling into people's laps 2 years prior.
Wow.
So there's themes in this show that are going to make everybody, including the theme of, family lines of family trees of just long power structures within states and governments and local authorities and everybody that's on the take or everybody that's looking the other way. It is a huge, huge indictment of this kind of institutional, traditional, tyranny that goes on. Yeah, like almost like a parallel reality that's just existing beyond a very thin, barrier we can't see behind. It's riveting.
Listen, I'm down for any show like that. And I got to be honest, I have spoken to several producer, directors, writers in Hollywood, right, over the past couple months who are friends of what we're doing, who are patriots, who are busting their butts to try and, affect some change. They are able to do this sort of a show and get it past producers who don't understand why they're doing it. So there are good guys out there in Hollywood writing these things, trying to get them out there to the public.
I believe it. I believe it because I believe that Hollywood is being used, or not so much Hollywood itself, because you can be a filmmaker, a writer, whatever the hell it is, a playwright. It doesn't matter. If you are trying to bring your craft to the stage or some kind of a performing art, there is such a powerful tool there to be able to tell a story and to be able to tip your hat to reality. Fiction, you can tell more truth in fiction than you can, reading the news or anything that is actually peddled as truth. So that's why I say now I believe that there are people out there. You don't necessarily have to be working within Hollywood to be a filmmaker and to do what you got to do. In fact, just like we were talking about before with why does everybody want to join a new team? Why does everybody want to see new networks pop up? Why can't we just start really honing in on individuals and creating a marketplace again for people to present great ideas or films or anything that we can consume and, vote with our wallets again? Mm-hmm. So just saying Hollywood sounds like a monolithic industry where you have no chance of getting a really great story or a narrative or something that you put together and self-funded or anything like that in front of an audience that would appreciate it. And I think that a lot of those, and I'm not really in the market for religious films, but I see how they are these patriotic religious films are embraced by audiences that limited releases in theaters.
Yeah, because they don't get any of that and they crave it.
And
right
people,
now.
Americans, why do you think when the Chris Kyle film comes out and all these Clint Eastwood films come out, people go and just soak them up and everybody else is just like, oh, of course, America, of course. It's like, yeah, we've been starving for so long
Frank,
something like this.
Let's put a movie out, Frank.
I have so many mini scripts written. They're all irreverent comedy, but I would love to put together something. Huh. And you know what? On that theme right there, as far as people putting things out and willing to tell stories that others won't.
Oh,
that's also a tool that's used by people who are actually in the shit.
Yep.
Who are actually perpetrating the worst of the worst.
Yeah, agreed. They have to show us what they're doing so that we'll accept it. That's true. We could go. You know what? We need to start doing special edition episodes.
That'd be great.
Really? Because we've got 20 minutes left, and I just found some breaking news, and we also have to talk a lot about the Clinton Foundation.
Go ahead.
Breaking news here is interesting. From Margot Cleveland from The Federalist. A federal judge enters order granting DOJ attorneys access to sealed documents in Enron case involving Mueller's, quote, pit bull, Andrew Weissman. First step in hopefully gaining access to documents. So there's a whole big thread here, which, again, I'll put in the show notes. But the government's been hiding these documents about Andrew Weissman's involvement in the Enron thing. And now all of a sudden, the DOJ wants to look into this case. I wonder why they're doing that, Frank. I mean, nothing's happening.
See, I just brought that up last night. Who was I reading? I think I might have been reading from the Gateway Pundit or something like that. When it actually pertained to Flynn and his 302s, Weissman popped up because they hearkened back to Enron and his destruction of the 302s for Enron.
Yep. Yeah. So they've just been granted access to these docs that they've been wanting for a little while now. Technofog. If you guys don't follow Technofog, it's at Techno_Fog. He's always got transcripts, court documents, great analysis. He's really good. And this is big because, you know, look, we'll get into the Clinton Foundation now, because I see yesterday on my feed, the beginning of that hearing was a shit show. Excuse my French. They had some guy, Hackney, who happened to be, God bless Jim Jordan. He was like the lead of the department where Lois Lerner was targeting conservatives for 501c3 status. And the Democrats trot him out there as some sort of nonpartisan, you know, arbiter. Did I lose you? I think I lost Frank, and he's calling back in right now. I lost Frank. It says my connection's poor, and I don't agree with that. I disagree. But they trotted this guy out there as some sort of an arbiter of truth and nonpartisanship, and in actuality, he was... There you are.
I don't know what the hell happened. I lost connection over here. It wasn't you.
Oh, okay. Well, I kept going and tried to make it as professional as possible. But, you know, we're going to fly. It's fine. Yeah, so I was just basically saying they trot that guy out there as some sort of a nonpartisan, you know, I just want to see more resources given to the IRS. And I'm like, ooh, there's only 10,000 auditors in all of the IRS. That's great news.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I didn't like that at all. And that Connolly guy, Connolly, first of all, I can't stand being introduced to new representatives. There's 435 of them or something like that. And, you tend to forget how many. You'll never, ever know all of them. And I'm so happy for that, because there's probably so many more Representative Connollys that just give you an ulcer to listen to.
He's
them.
He's like, this is just an old trope. They're bringing this out again, and there's a lawsuit going on, and everybody, this is bull.
He was like the Penguin.
Yeah, and like I said last night with that guy, the thing that infuriates me is that because they are the system, and because they pick the winners and the losers, they are able to have people like James Comey go out there with the help of the rest of his friends and reinterpret law to make sure that the laundry list of crimes they found that Hillary Clinton had committed will not be charged. And because they simply say we're not going to charge her for these crimes, verified crimes that we found, that is now we can say it's old news. Nothing happened. She was never charged. Therefore, she was never in the wrong. But she was. Just because you grant clemency to some people and you do not relent on others is it's so infuriating.
Listen, you're right. And you that I couldn't have said it any better than that. Like, seriously, listening to that guy go on. And I'll be honest with you, the Republicans didn't have their crap together for that first section of the hearing either. I mean, it was a shit show. I was like, what am I even doing? I live tweeted it. right? And a lot of people like when I do that because they can't watch it. So I really try to transcribe what's happening like rapid fire. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. This is useless. Like, it was just the Democrats and Coffee McCofferson, for goodness sakes.
Who's that coughing woman?
That woman, I felt horrible for her, to be honest. Like, why are you there coughing your germs all over everybody?
And she's wearing that bitch face, too.
You know, resting bitch face, yes.
Resting bitch face. And it was just, I couldn't, everything that Connelly said, she sat there like, yep. Yep, that's the way it is. I can't stand it. But let me ask you something else about that hearing. They brought up Uranium One, and Connelly in particular brings up Uranium One and how even that is just a big fraud. He said that the FBI informant that they had, that William Campbell, that I have tons of articles on William Campbell and his testimony and what he had seen, the bribery, the kickbacks and all that stuff in his history working with not only the FBI but the CIA. What is this that Connelly's talking about, that under questioning William Campbell's story fell apart? Yeah. I never heard anything about his testimony falling apart.
It's bull. And let me tell you why you know it's bull. Because everything else that came out of his mouth was bull. He said that these were these two that were coming, the whistleblowers that were coming to talk, were in a lawsuit. He said that they were discredited. He said that this was old news that's already been talked about. The whole entire statement he made was all lies, like legitimately straight up. And I found it really interesting, Frank, that the most of those people, save Coffee McCofferson, who, not for nothing, in the second half really seemed a little bit concerned about what she was hearing, I gotta be honest, everybody except for them left for the second half of this. Did you notice that?
Oh, absolutely. And I can understand why Mark Meadows would be frustrated with what was going on. At first, you see that Huber's not there. You see that the room is practically empty. You see that Connelly and his side of the room are taking all the opportunities they can to make sure that anybody that is watching those first 10 minutes will say, all right, well, this is a big farce. I'm turning this off. That was good enough for me.
Exactly, which is absolutely true, because I was so close to doing it myself.
Yeah. Well, listen, I was close to doing when it was the same effect of Christine Ford when she went up there and she did her thing before we heard from Brett Kavanaugh. I'm like, you know what? I don't believe her for a second, but this just sounds bad. You know, this looks and sounds. I know. Yeah. As far as trying to look at this through the lens of public perception and the average viewer, what they're going to get from this, this just does not. This does not look good. And then, of course, Kavanaugh comes out, and I go, "Oh, Ford. Oh shit. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. It's all right.
All right. Sorry.
That was kind of.
I try not to say the F word on the.
You know what?
Edit that out.
Yeah, well, I can have a funny, like, sound effect put over it.
Looks like another year on the naughty list for you.
But, you know, you're right. And not forget, like, forget normal audiences. They didn't give a crap about this at all. Forget normal audiences. Even our own people who are thoroughly engaged in this walked away from that first half. And even some the second half saying, this is all nonsense. No one's ever going to jail. Nothing's ever going to happen. This is all for show. Nobody. It's starting to really, and it's really starting to get me like frustrated inside to hear these people when we have days where we have these massive wins like yesterday. And people,
show us the win. What can we all take away from yesterday that was very big, especially from the hearing in Clinton? I mean, I know that there was a huge confirmation about the FBI investigation that has been launched in Arkansas. The 757s that were pretty much taking boatloads of documents out of there. That's a very big confirmation.
That's a big deal. That's a really, really big deal, because the Clinton Foundation, like those guys that were standing up there, weren't saying like, oh, all we have them on is tax fraud. They hinted very strongly that they have them on lots of other crimes that they found through their investigation. These are former U.S. attorney in there, okay, or a former Department of Justice investigator. I forget the title exactly. These are not like some slouches from Boston that just sound great, you know what I mean? So these guys actually found other criminality that they've obviously given over to the correct venue, and have obviously this venue has been looking into this stuff. And I want to be honest again, the Clinton Foundation is directly connected to Uranium One. There is already and has been a grand jury seated in the Uranium One case. And we know that because it's handing out indictments. There was an indictment in January of this year. I believe there was an indictment in April of this year on the Uranium One case of lower-ish level guys involved in it. So for everybody out there, and I'm getting a little, you know, feisty here, guys, and please excuse me, but for everyone out there who's telling you that the sky is falling, nothing's happening, no justice will ever be served, tell them to take a step back, take a deep breath, and actually do some damn research before they start spouting off all those talking points, because it's bull. There is tons going on right now. Tons.
Mm. Yeah, the bad thing, the only sucky thing is that you have to listen to 4 hours to get three slivers of light.
Listen,
that's the problem.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. I do this for a living. My job is to sit and listen to 4 hours so that you don't freaking have to. And, you know, you place your trust in me that I'm going to deliver to you the facts from that 4 hours that you need to know. And here's what they are. There is an active, very active, ongoing FBI investigation into the Clinton Foundation that has been ongoing for quite a long time now, of which a FBI secretly flew into Little Rock, Arkansas, with a 757 jet to carry all of the paperwork that they seized from the Clinton Foundation offices. That these guys who were doing their independent investigation gave this information to John Huber, the IG, the FBI, and the IRS, and were physically present to take pictures of the document transfer from the Clinton Foundation to the 757, which means they're very much involved with the investigation. They couldn't say that yesterday, but I'm telling you, they've got these photos they send to the IRS. No other photos were provided that I know of, right?
That I didn't hear anything.
So everyone's like, well, what is Huber even doing? Right?
Yeah.
When there is an ongoing investigation of that caliber already in the FBI that's actually being done, answer me a question. Why is John Huber going to do it too?
I don't know. I don't know. Answer it for me.
There is no reason for him to do it as well. So while he may be involved with updates and things like that, and it is interesting that he just reached out to these guys to say, oh, I looked at your stuff, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you that I'm thinking more and more about this. And I think the reason why John Huber reached out to them was so that when they did appear at this hearing, it didn't appear that he had no interest in it whatsoever. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and there's more there. There's more there that I'm still thinking through in my head. But I'm telling you, yesterday was a massive. The fact that no Democrats basically were in that room for those guys, and the fact that they had the balls to stand up to the few Democrats that were and say, you brought us here. Don't start. You know, the exchanges were just, they were fiery. They were interesting. I understand now the dynamic between Meadows just wanted it out there. And I have a hard time believing that Meadows had no idea that this was happening. I mean,
if that was the case, then he put up a really great act at first. He seemed confrontational with the people that was there testifying. And he also he seemed pretty just ornery in general. And then I think toward the end, when all the stuff about Huber and the active investigation that's going on in Little Rock came out, he started, it seemed like he had a little bit of an aha moment.
Mm.
Oh.
Well, maybe that's why we couldn't get any of these people here.
Yes.
You know, what bothers me about it, and then I'm going to jump to one other significant point that I don't think anybody's made yet. What bothers me about it, Frank, is that Tom Fitton, who does this for a living and looks at government documents all day, and I thought like something was wrong, like somebody had to have gotten him a cup of coffee yesterday. He needed a cup of coffee. I don't know. But he knows this. If anybody with a brain that does this investigative work, even you knew this. Come on. Like, really. Not even you. Like, you're...
It's just...
You know what I mean. Like, yeah. You don't do this as your main thing. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, your main thing is not investigating all these tiny little things and figuring out what's going on. So... even people like you who are very invested in this but don't spend their entire day doing it know that there are these investigations going on from what we see in the public sphere. For Tom Fitton to be like, I don't know why anybody's no one's doing anything about this. I'm like, why are you just firing people up to lose hope and think that nothing's happening? Like, we need public outcry to keep these things going on, but we also need people to understand that there is something happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Clinton Foundation is important. Are you mad at me?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, why would I be mad?
Because that came off wrong. Like, I didn't mean it the way it came out, and I just
you have no clue how little I care.
Okay. Well, now I do. I mean, geez, thanks a lot for not giving a crap about what I say.
No, as far as that, you know, I understand. That's not what I.
I just pulled the woman card on you.
No, last night I was listening. Last night I was talking about Antarctica and religious artifacts in Antarctica.
Yeah. The hell,
you know, that's where I spend my time because I know people like you are going to cover the rest.
Yeah. So yes, and so one more point about this Clinton Foundation thing. When I was interviewing, and I'm going to break down what I'm going to do, Frank, is break down my own Papadopoulos interview, and I'm going to dissect it like I did to Dan, to myself.
Okay.
Because there's stuff that I could have done a better job. I didn't do a poor job, but I could have done a better job. One of the things that they said in the very beginning of that interview, which was bombshell to me, was that Mifsud was a big Clinton Foundation donor and spent a lot of time having dinner with Hillary Clinton.
Hmm.
So if we're investigating the Clinton Foundation and all those connections and ties and everything else, I wonder if we're going to stumble upon a Spygate tie.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. It would be interesting.
And you know,
the other thing on Spygate, too, because I saw some reporting, very doom and gloom reporting yesterday about the 302, about the devices that Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were using, how they were wiped clean and reassigned to other agents, and how this is pretty much the... You know, that was the last straw. There's going to be justice here. I keep saying, you brought up Joseph Mifsud. There are so many ways that this house of cards can come down.
Yeah.
To say that anything is relegated to whether or not we are able to get 15,000 more text messages out of Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, who have already demonstrated their bias and their conniving in huge ways. I mean, we have all the evidence in the world, but we won't be able to get anything done unless we get even more evidence of bias.
You're
and
right.
Reasons. It's so ridiculous. Joseph Mifsud, he takes it all apart. Carter Page and George Papadopoulos take it all apart. Seth Rich takes it the whole thing down. The whole damn thing comes down. That's at the bottom right there. Who gave these emails? Who gave these downloads to WikiLeaks? I mean, who cares about Peter Strzok at that point? If there's no exchange between, you know, Russia and WikiLeaks and the Trumps, then there's no story, no matter what part you start deciphering this in.
I'm tired. I'm sick and tired of the fear porn sellers, the doom and gloom, there's no hope sellers. I'm done with it. What that article failed to mention was that they also recovered almost 100,000 more lines of text in their forensic review. So yeah, they wiped the phone and Lisa Page's phone was sitting there and someone took it and she left it there. Yeah, that's shady and everything. And yeah, they said, it doesn't look like anyone deleted anything intentionally. That's probably BS too. But what else is in there? 100,000 more lines of text that they didn't have before? Why is nobody talking about that?
I don't know. I don't know, because you'd think that would be a a positive reporting of information that could be just as effective as the negative bombshell that some people choose to jump all over. And like I said before, this is that it's only one fraction.
Yep.
One fraction of the story of the, you know, the inconsistencies, the I don't know.
You 100% agree with you. 100% agree with you. And you know, look at this Clinton Foundation thing. Clinton Foundation, it's child trafficking. It's human trafficking. It's the exploitation of poor, underprivileged countries. It's pay to play for state secrets. It's selling off our uranium. This foundation permeated the entire world with corruption.
And not only that, let's take Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and throw them in the trash where they belong for a second. You go and you take the overtaking of the DNC by the Clinton campaign, because the DNC was broke and penniless and without any kind of real way to function. They had no functioning left. You take all of that stuff and the shit that we know that the Clinton Foundation is doing on their own time throughout multiple presidencies, and what they're doing peddling their own influence. But they're this same group of people is also the same group that funded the peace that was used to actually launch a lot of these spy campaigns and legitimize the efforts that are going on from within our government to affect the outcome of an American election. I mean, you could throw Peter Strzok and Lisa Page in the trash. There's so many ways you can come at this farce because nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
Nothing makes sense.
Would you agree with me that we're going somewhere now? Does it feel to you as though we're going somewhere?
Oh, I believe that we have been going somewhere. I've never not believed that part. There are days I'm more frustrated than others because I can't stand the dog and pony show. I can't stand the reassuring smiles from the criminals. I can't stand this aura of confidence that these low lives have when they address cameras like Jim Comey and the rest of them. That stuff gets me so irritated on the surface. Deep down inside, I see the developments and I see that, you know, there has been a stream of developments that have been consistent. And I don't believe that nothing is happening. That's absolutely not where it is. It doesn't take away from the external frustration that ebbs and flows with me, though.
Yeah, agreed. I get frustrated, too. I want people to understand that while the wheel of justice is turning very slowly, I would much rather this wheel turn this slowly than just to pacify some people that can't get out of their own way for a few minutes. We arrest people with no solid cases. They walk and can never be tried again for the rest of their lives for the crimes they committed. Just so that we pacify people that are like, we want arrests. Can't. Sorry. Too
well,
important.
That's what the other side does.
I know.
I mean, look at this thing right now. Think about this. Everybody's talking about, you want to talk about false promises and what's going on here. The Democrats during the lead up to the midterms were promising to abolish ICE. And now the midterms are over. They have the House back. Nobody's going to be abolishing ICE. It was all nonsense. I said this before. Can you imagine? It's one thing to be duped. It's one thing to be duped by people who say they're going to, you know, uphold the Constitution. It's another thing to be duped by people who sold you, you know, third world type of investigative campaigns and jail time for your political enemies. And they have absolutely nothing. I mean, and they don't come through. For example, Adam Schiff or anybody else going out there saying that there's a real chance that the president is going to be thrown in jail after he leaves office. What is that? Is there any basis of reality there? No. When you look into Cohen, you look into his private business dealings in 2016, there is nothing suspicious about it if you're not looking at it through the lens that they have given their constituents of suspicious Russian, you know, meddling because they lost an election. The only reason why anything that Donald Trump was involved in and the people who were surrounding him in 2016 and maybe 2015 in the lead up to the election in 2016. The only reason why that looks suspicious at all is because they gave everybody the lens through which to view it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you take a look at that, and now he says, well, he could be going to jail. Everybody's talking about jail time and unindicted co-conspirators and all that stuff. If you can just get him out of office, what does that tell you? It tells you they know they have nothing. There's no jail time coming, and they just want to give people something to vote on in 2020. Because once Donald Trump leaves office, whether it be in January 2021 or January 2024 or whenever the hell it is, 2025, there's not going to be any jail time coming. You know, and that's the farce, because they have nothing. And if you look into what they have, you clearly see they have nothing. On the other hand, you need to actively deny what is laid out in front of us to be able to see that they are, you know, that's.
Yeah, I agree. Goodness.
That's why I hope that, you know, there are some ballsy people on the inside who are going to stop at nothing to actually get to the to actually bring this to fruition, because we have substance. They have empty promises and just really weak campaign platforms that they're trying to build on nothingness. Because what are they going to do? They're promising jail time to the sitting president, and they're promising to re-raise taxes.
Yay.
Yeah, you're like, sign me up for that. That sounds great.
Yay. Well, this is the end of this episode of Dark to Light with what? What is it?
Jingle jangle. We're going to need a couple of jingle jangles on this episode to mute me.
Just one.
Okay.
And me, beans. I'm never going to say anything else. Just beans. Just boring. It's getting boring. You're fun every week, at least. I'm boring.
Wow.
Anyway.
Next week is going to be a Christmassy show, so you have something up.
Yeah. We really need to get some sound effects going or something fun to spice this up.
Well, I can get soundboards over here, just that whenever I cue up audio, I don't think that it registers on your end.
We'll have to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's about time.
Okay.
So you guys can catch the Dark to Light podcast with Jingle Jangle Frank and Beans on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RadioInfluence.com. Stay tuned for a rocky weekend, and keep your eyes peeled on some analysis of whatever happened today with Flynn after the show. Talk to you guys soon.
Take care.
This is Jim Fannin, America's Zone Coach, and I'm excited about bringing my new podcast, The Jim Fannin Show, to RadioInfluence.com. Each week, we're going to talk about the zone and how this mindset can help you in all facets of your life. I'll give you all the tools you need to change your life and help guide you to become your genuine, authentic best self. With the only proven blueprint for attracting the zone mindset, I've helped transform millions of lives. In my 40 years of experience, I've coached CEOs and senior executives from 350 of the Fortune 500 companies in 50 different industries. I've coached professional athletes, Olympic gold medalists, Hall of Famers, all pros, all stars, entertainers, and so many more to help them gain the tools and techniques to create a life of simplicity, balance, and abundance. And now it's my privilege to bring these methods to you every week, along with some of my champion good friends as special guests. If you want to get in the zone in all you do, check out the Jim Fannin Show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.